You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community. And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle, and this is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, May 15, 2019.
China is the largest importer of U.S. soybeans. So it's 60% of the U.S. soybean exports goes to China, and that accounts for more than 30% of the total U.S. production, which is...
The United States and China have been in trade negotiations for the past year. In today's feature report, correspondent Cade Young hashes out the potential consequences for farmers and manufacturers in Indiana as talk of tariffs increases. That's coming up later in the program.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Amazon released their popular Echo audio listening device for kids last year, and consumer advocacy firms are concerned the devices store too much information. More on that story later in the program on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
Monroe County commissioners are concerned about the impact the delayed roadwork will have on the new IU hospital. In their meeting this morning, Commissioner Julie Thomas said the commissioners will be asking the Indiana Metropolitan Planning Organization to reconsider dates for state-coordinated road work in the area. Thomas sits on the local MPO Policy Committee.
So at our last MPO Policy Committee meeting, some discussions ensued about the fact that the hospital construction is anticipated to be done by 2021, yet the expansion of State Road 45 East from the bypass all the way to Russell Road has been tabled and pushed back by NDOT, because it's their road, until 2023, 2024. And we just anticipate that the traffic in this area, from intersections to inadequate pedestrian access crossing, inadequate bike lanes, side paths, pedestrian walkways. We've made a note of all of these issues and our concerns, and we're asking, begging NDOT to move this forward on their calendar as quickly as possible, hopefully before the hospital opens, because we imagine that ambulance services, patients, and employees will be using Range Road, Pete Ellis, and State Road 45 East intersection quite a bit, and it is not ready for that kind of traffic load.
Thomas said the commissioners are also concerned about logging that occurred on private property adjacent to Lake Monroe. She said the commissioners are contacting the Indiana Department of Environmental Management. She referenced an IDEM ruling governing stormwater runoff associated with construction activities.
We have not received the requisite permits here, and we have also are looking at the Rule 5, looking at instigating a Rule 5 notice of intent with IDEM about the logging and its impact on the lake and sedimentation. So we're very concerned about that.
In other business, the commissioners heard from Hoosier National Forest Supervisor Mike Chavez on the Houston South Project. The project is located within the Lake Monroe watershed and calls for logging within approximately 4,000 acres of forest. More than 400 acres would be clear cut. Chavez told commissioners after a period of public comment last fall, the project is now being analyzed by specialists.
These are hydrologists, biologists, botanists, archaeologists, etc., very specialists, and take a look at what they anticipate the effects of the proposed action would be. We then adjust some of our recommendations and some of our actions that we plan on taking, and then put it out for another round of public comment, which will be happening probably late summer this year or early fall.
Chavez said the exact dates and locations for future public input sessions have not been yet set. Commissioners Julie Thomas and Lee Jones expressed concern about the use of the broad-spectrum herbicide glyphosate.
That's going to end up in our water supply, and that's my concern. And is the environmental aspect of that going to be studied, or are you just going to reference back to the previous study from the other property in northern Indiana?
I'm not sure which other property it is part of our analysis process. So the effects, the anticipated effects of all of our actions, including the one you're referring to, would be analyzed within that and disclosed prior to making any decision on how we utilize it. I do want to point out, we saw in the initial round of scoping some misunderstanding, I think, of the manner and use of herbicides that are being proposed. We use them in a couple ways. One big one being to treat non-native invasive species. At that scale, it's just not something you can do with simply hand pulling. And another is to treat some other native species, but in order to give oak an opportunity to regenerate that native hardwood. Some people tend to picture in their minds crop dusters or broadcast spraying of herbicide, which is not what we are proposing doing. These are spot treatments, very localized.
Regarding Thomas's concerns about sedimentation, Chavez said forest officials take water quality very seriously, and he said best water quality management practices will be stringently applied.
But we'll be taking into account any studies that are out there. And I know some folks did provide us with, some references they'd like us to consider during the comment period. We'll consider all those and review those. And if you have any new ones you'd like us to, you can always send that to us as well.
Monroe County Commissioners will meet again May 22nd.
The Monroe County Community School Board approved a 10-cent increase in school meal prices last night. Food Services Director Hattie Johnson said the 10-cent increase will apply to breakfasts and lunches served at MCCSC schools, but not snacks.
Which would bring our elementary prices to $2.85, middle school to $2.90, high school to $3. Breakfast would also go up 10 cents, so we'd move K-12 breakfast from $1.60 to $1.70, adult breakfast from $2 to $2.10, and then we're recommending that we hold after-school snacks at the same price. There is no legislation to dictate what our snack prices need to be, and so at $1.25 per snack, we are covering the costs for those after-school snacks.
Johnson explained the increase is needed for MCCSC to comply with federal regulations. The new prices will take effect in the coming 2019 to 2020 school year.
A student-oriented housing project proposed for North Walnut Street is coming under scrutiny. In today's Plan Commission meeting, members expressed concern about connectivity and the project's student focus. Missouri-based Collegiate Development Group is proposing redeveloping the current site of the Motel 6 at 1800 North Walnut Street. Their plans call for a 5-to-6-story, 820-bedroom housing complex with parking garage. The site to be developed lies north of 17th Street between Walnut and Dunn. In presenting the proposal, senior zoning planner Eric Grulich said citing the project in an area already developed with student housing fits with the city's new comprehensive plan. Many commission members agreed the project was appropriate for the site, but commission member Brad Whistler said any benefits of adding more student housing were mitigated by connectivity problems.
Yeah, it was said a couple of times tonight that this is adjacent to campus. Let's be honest, this is not adjacent to campus. It's near campus, but it is not adjacent to campus. And in order to get from here to campus, you're going to have to walk or ride your bike on the busiest street in town.
In addition to more than 800 bedrooms, the plan proposes a 410-space parking garage and private shuttle service. Whistler was among those who encouraged the development of connectivity eastward and among nearby properties.
Think about living here. Yeah, there's a grocery that's nearby, but there is a 0% chance you're walking to the grocery store from this property. I mean, every single one of these residents is going to get in their car to drive a few hundred yards over to Kroger, right? We've got to figure out how to get some amenities within this neighborhood that are walkable in order for us to really see the benefits of having this kind of density. The density can and should be a good thing, but it's got to be density of housing and supporting services within the same neighborhood.
Commission member Jillian Kinsey favored better pedestrian connectivity over adding another student housing shuttle to street traffic.
The other thing I think I really want to emphasize is the walk route to Varsity Lane. And, you know, whether there's a dual route path, a wide path that's put in or proposed that could allow for bikes on one side, walkers on the other, that's designated, that might make that a little safer and more direct with some lighting. I mean, we want to encourage people to walk, but we want to make sure that they're walking in a safe area, that it's well lit, that it's clear, that we don't end up with pedestrians interacting with scooters and bikes in ways that aren't safe.
The issue of affordable housing with diverse tenants was also discussed. Whistler lamented on what he sees as a trend to create more and more segregated housing for students.
So my biggest concern of everything I heard tonight is that seems to be what you want. And I'm sure there's plenty of people in town and probably people in this building who told you that's what we want. But it isn't what I want. And I think in the long term, we're doing ourselves a real disservice if we continue down that path. We got to stop thinking about buildings as being student or being market or being senior or being workforce. We got to start thinking about how we're building buildings where it can be all of the above. Because if we continue to develop every building purpose-built for one particular demographic, and we start building our zoning laws to say, well, that type of building can only be over here and this can be over here, we will never get over the tension that exists between the student population and our neighborhoods.
In voicing support for the project, Commission member Susan Sandberg responded to Whistler's comments. She said in a college town, it's simply a matter of separating different lifestyles. She also addressed the connectivity issue.
And there's nothing that would prohibit a family with children to want to move into Evolve or to move into this place, but let's be honest, let's be real. If you've got a schedule that requires you to get up early in the morning and maybe your neighbors down the hallway are on a night schedule and their Thursday nights are a little more raucous, that's not a compatibility kind of livable form. So we do have to listen to our public. We do have to listen to our adjacent neighbors with respect to where are the appropriate locations for primarily student housing. And of course, this is a demographic that can walk and they can bike and they do take Ubers and they are familiar with public transit. And so I also agree that we do need to make sure that those modes of transportation, the connectivity that we all want to see, are also in play here.
Commission Chair Joe Hoffman also responded, saying he thinks building more student housing will lead to more affordable housing overall, as well as a more integrated community.
I'd like to see us build 5,000 purpose-built student apartments in places where we think they could feasibly go because of what kind of pressure, downward pressure, that would put on other apartments in less convenient locations for students to cluster. What will happen is that those other complexes, which are segregated student complexes today, will become communities in which there will be both students, families, young professionals sharing that space.
The developer requested to bypass the city council and allow the city's planning staff to give final site plan approval. Commission members Whistler, Kappas, Hoffman, and Kinsey said they could not support that request, with Kinsey being protective of public input.
At this point, I'm not inclined to delegate the final plan to staff. Not that I don't trust the staff. I have ultimate confidence in the staff, but suspect we'll need ongoing public comment on this, and it will be more beneficial to have more public comment than to seem like we're bypassing that public comment.
The Bloomington Plan Commission will review the proposal again in its June 10th meeting.
Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B Line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a kitchen featuring local, seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner is available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. China announced on Friday it would increase tariffs on $50 billion worth of imports from the United States. As WFHB correspondent Kay Young reports, a looming trade war would hurt Indiana farmers and consumers alike.
Trade negotiations between the United States and China ended without a deal last Friday. Instead, the U.S. raised tariffs on over $200 billion worth of Chinese imports. Shortly after, China announced retaliatory measures, increasing tariffs on $50 billion worth of U.S. imports. Soybeans and corn, of which China is the largest importer in the world, make up one-third of U.S. exports. One-third of Indiana's soybean crops end up in China. The stalled trade talks and subsequent tariffs on U.S. imports will disproportionately hurt Indiana farmers. Agriculture comprises 17%, or $59 billion, of the state's gross domestic product. Assistant Professor of Economics at Indiana University, Mostafa Beshkar, focuses on international trade as it pertains to trade policy. Beshkar says China may look elsewhere on the global market to find its soybeans and corn if it can't reach a deal with the United States.
So on the corn and soybeans, we know that China is the largest importer of U.S. soybeans. So it's 60% of the U.S. soybean exports goes to China, and that accounts for more than 30% of total U.S. production, which is very substantial. And now there are reports that China has started importing soybeans from Brazil and other countries, and they're getting ready for this. So this clearly has a big impact on soybean producers in the U.S., and we have already seen that in Indiana as well.
The trade talks with China began almost exactly a year ago. Beshkar says, as it stands right now, some industries might benefit if the talks come to a close without a resolution to the tariff negotiations. But he says the overall cost for Indiana farmers and families would outweigh any benefits.
It seems to me and many economists that both sides are going to lose a lot. So there is no benefit in the trade war. In fact, if there was a benefit to trade wars, we would have done this much earlier. Both countries are going to lose substantially. And this is not only limited to China and the U.S., because China is a country where they re-export a lot of their imports, and a lot of exports that they have are imports from other countries, basically. So this is going to affect a lot of countries. And I don't see an aggregate gain for any country. So there are particular businesses that may gain. For example, corn producers in Brazil are happy about this situation. Steel producers in the U.S. are happy, but overall, the cost is going to be substantial. There are estimates that show that, depending on how far the trade war with China goes, the annual impact on a family of four in the U.S. could be between $700 to $2,400 per year.
The tariffs, or taxes on imported goods to a country, would increase the prices American consumers pay for Chinese manufactured goods. China doesn't pay $50 billion to export goods to the United States. It's the companies and corporations importing Chinese goods that do. Those companies end up raising prices on goods in order to make up the difference, meaning Americans pay more for their cell phones, computers, furniture, and other imports. In Indiana, soybeans are the top agricultural export to the global market. The price for a bushel of soybeans has dropped by 20% since trade talks began last year. The trade war ultimately puts pressure on Indiana's farmers. While the Trump administration remains optimistic about trade talks, it casts a cloud of uncertainty for Hoosier farmers and consumers. According to the Washington, D.C.-based trade consultancy Trade Partnership Worldwide, tariffs could cost more than 59,000 farmers' jobs across the U.S., or roughly 6% of farmers' jobs. There was a sense before last Friday that trade negotiations were soon coming to a compromise between the global superpowers. But the latest tariffs leveled by the U.S. and subsequently China cast uncertainty over the talks. As a result, farmers will likely receive some form of federal aid in the midst of the stalled trade talks with Beijing. Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb, a Republican in a state Trump won over by 15 points in the 2016 presidential election, has criticized the administration's tariff policies. Last June, Holcomb voiced his concern over retaliatory tariffs to Vice President Mike Pence. Melanie Fitzpatrick, Senior Director of Marketing and Communications for the Indiana Soybean Alliance and the Indiana Corn Growers Association, says anything that negatively affects agriculture will in turn negatively affect the Hoosier economy.
Agriculture in Indiana represents almost 17% of the GDP of the Indiana economy, so it's huge. And corn and soybeans feed livestock. Livestock is also significant in Indiana. So in general, you know, anything that negatively affects agriculture is going to negatively affect the Indiana economy.
Fitzpatrick said farmers would like to see the trade war with China resolved. She remains hopeful for a best-case scenario for farmers in Indiana.
Well, I think corn and soybean farmers, like everyone else, would like to see the trade situation with China resolved. And so that's very important. And then the other best-case scenario would be that the sun comes out and it dries up and the farmers can get their crops in the ground.
Manufacturing is another large part of the Indiana economy that would be hit by the escalating trade tensions between the U.S. and China. Manufacturers in Indiana accounted for 28.6% of the total output of the state in 2018, according to the National Association for Manufacturers. Manufacturers employed 17% of the workforce last year. In 2017, Indiana exported over $20 billion in manufactured goods. Small businesses made up almost 85% of all exporters in the state. There are other key U.S. imports from China that will hurt consumers. Cell phones, car parts, TVs, computer parts, and printers fall under the blanket of these tariffs. According to the U.S. International Trade Commission, in 2018, Americans spent almost $45 billion on cell phones made in China. On car parts, Americans spent $2.3 billion last year. Last year, both of these imports were tariffed at 10%. This week, the tariffs see a 15% increase on these billion-dollar industries to 25%. Monday, the Dow dropped 617 points, down by 2.4%. It was the worst day for U.S. industrial markets in months, and it was attributed to the unresolved trade tensions between China and the United States. President Trump announced yesterday that the talks will come to a conclusion in the next 3 to 4 weeks. For WFHB, I'm Cade Young.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Now there are smart speakers or voice assistants or artificial intelligences for children, and they may be dangerous. If you have kids or someone you know has kids, listen up. Last year, Amazon introduced a version of its Alexa personal assistant for kids called Echo Dot Kids with brightly colored speakers they can use. There are more than 2,000 apps available for this system, including games, quizzes, and skills teaching programs. The problem is, Alexa apparently listens to everything it hears and remembers it, and won't let anybody, including parents, delete what it's heard. We're talking about kids under 13, jabbering away about anything and everything, even when there are no parents around, even when parents have not given permission. Recently, 19 different privacy advocate organizations asked the Federal Trade Commission to investigate whether Alexa is violating the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. These groups include the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, the Center for Digital Democracy, Public Citizen, and the U.S. Public Interest Research Group.
Amazon issued a statement saying it does not violate the act, but a statement from the manufacturer doesn't settle the issue. Consumer Reports weighed in, too. They tested Echo Dot Kids and found that the information was still remembered even after a registered parent went through a procedure to delete it. And they found that of the 2,077 apps the device can use, 1,758 have no privacy policy at all. That's over 86%. They examined the policies of the apps that did have them and discovered they were hard to understand and full of irrelevant information. The feature the testers used is called Remember This, and that's supposed to make it easy for the system to help children remember things like a dog's name, a best friend's name, telephone numbers, the code for a garage door opener. And don't forget, all that information is stored somewhere else, out there online, in a computer that somebody else has to protect from hackers. A computer that's a particularly juicy target for hackers because it contains so much information about so many children. Parents, godparents, grandparents, uncles and aunts, please remember that all of these things are brand spanking new. Yes, kids all grow up with the internet today, and yes, kids all want to have a neat toy that they've seen other kids have. But new technology is never perfect. It always has bugs in it that need to be found and corrected. And it always gets better as time goes along, just like cars and televisions and everything else. We grown-ups have seen that happen, but children haven't. They usually assume something new is perfect until there's a problem. It's always been up to us adults to protect children, and if it's getting more complicated than ever before, that doesn't change our responsibility, does it? I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break. You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Cade Young.
Our engineer today, Dan Withard, executive producer Wes Martin, theme music provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Danny Graff, and Scott Schmadeke. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for the Hijabi Diaries, a series examining the experiences and issues facing Muslim women in Brown County and beyond. The Hijabi Diaries, coming up next right here on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.